Everybody, welcome to this actually second meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs. It looks like it's about 5 minutes after one on February 10th, 2005. And we have roll call. We have Representative Dahlstrom is here, Representative Thomas, Representative Sisnett, Representative Grunberg, Senator Huggins, and myself, Chair Representative Bob Lynn. And Representative Elkins has an excused absence today. He's traveling out of state, but he expressed great interest in what we're doing today. Next meeting, we're scheduled to hear Representative Dahlstrom's bills, but today, you're really going to enjoy the meeting today. This is not just a dog and pony show like you usually see with a bunch of slides. This is an actual real-time demonstration. It's a very unique capability, which I had the pleasure of seeing, well, I guess 2-3 weeks ago now, and I was just blown away by it. I want to welcome everybody in the audience and the Marine Exchange Service of Alaska for a maritime security briefing. And this whole thing to me has homeland security implications. It has public safety implications and many other implications. And so with that, Paul, I'd like to introduce Paul Foose, who's the President of the Marine Exchange Board, to start us off and welcome and show us what you have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and I am president of the board. We formed this organization about 3 years ago to provide services to the maritime industry in Alaska. And I think when we watched the 9/11 incidents, we were able to see the tracks of those airplanes, and they were able to follow them and know what they were doing, and it was a critical factor in determining what happened. And of course, that capability has been upgraded, but we've never had that on the water before. But we've been developing this capability in Alaska primarily for search and rescue, and what triggered it was this Arctic Rose. When 15 people went down and died, we had no idea until 6 hours later that the sister ship was 7 miles away and could have responded to it. So we started working on this long-range tracking and data GIS data systems to plot them on, and a little bit later when we tell you the role that it played in the Seldanga U incident here, I think you'll see some of the value to it. But we've received a grant from the Coast Guard of $1.3 million to test this system, which we think will become the standard for the entire United States. And partly we did it because Alaska is so vast. We have 30,000 miles of coastline. For a lot of the other ports, their information systems, LA Long Beach, with a pair of binoculars, you can see everything that's coming to you. And of course, in Alaska, you can't do that. The other reason we formed this organization is because no state is more maritime than Alaska. And our in Alaska, 90% of the goods that come into our state come by water. And for our exports, 95% of our exports go out. So our state could not function as an economy without our maritime trades up here. The other reason we did it is that, and we have a program called Maritime Pride in Education, is that the only time people ever hear about the marine trades is when somebody's had a wreck and oil is spilled all over, or a ship has crashed and, you know, people are dying and things like that. But very few people have an appreciation for what the maritime trades actually bring to Alaska. And in that regard, I just want to tell you about the people who are setting out here. And this is also an unprecedented occurrence in Alaska, where we have brought together all the unions, the employers, all the training facilities, including AVTAC and outside training facilities, and everyone, because we don't have a coordinated program of providing training for Alaskans to work in the maritime trades. And the Department of Labor did some statistics and show that about 45% of the jobs are done by non-residents. Well, these are good jobs, but there are also many of them are licensed jobs, and you can't work unless you have the license and you have the education. A lot of our kids grew up on the water. They're used to, you know, be fishing or whatever, you know, because we're a maritime state. So it just seemed like a natural to us. And almost all these people are here for this collaborative consortium. And we had some really great meetings today. And we're going to file a report from that. We've gotten a grant from Commissioner O'Clery to put this whole thing together. And it's the first time that it's ever happened for the maritime trade. So. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Captain Page, and Ed used to be head of the Marine Safety Office here, and we worked together on some emergency response and blew up some ships when I was working as a commercial diver out in Dutch Harbor. Used to have a lot more fun. But anyway, and he used to be head of the captain of the port of L.A. Long Beach, where he set up a similar government-private sector consortium to work together. And we've got great companies up here in the maritime trades. They want to operate safely. They want to contribute to our state. And they've made a real commitment to this Alaskan hire in Alaska. So with that, Captain Page.
Well, first, I'll start off. I'm going to give you a couple slides. I know Representative Lynn said it wasn't going to be just slides. We're going to have a couple slides to set the foundation. Then we're going to go real time and actually see ships moving around the world and in Alaska. And that'll be assisted by people smarter than me, like Bill Benning, who's the operations manager. I know it can be done. I have no idea how to do it, but I hire smart people, who was another Coast Guard guy. So between him and I, we got over 50 years of Coast Guard experience, and we brought on Leo DeMeo to help us, and Diane Boyd, one of our staff, and Rich Preston. So we have several people with a lot of experience that come up with these ideas. But our mission statement is quite simple. We're a nonprofit, and our mission is to provide information, communications, and services to help ensure safe, secure, efficient, and environmentally responsible maritime operations. And as Representative Lynn said, that some of these solutions actually aid all those programs. Next slide, if you would, please. And just, what is the Marine Exchange? We're not exchanging Marines for Coast Guard people or whatever. We're really exchanging maritime information. And the genesis goes back to the 1800s, where literally they were spy glasses. Instead of everybody having their own spy glass lining the cliffs, that one person with spy glass would send before across the bay, the Marine Exchange office building would exchange that information with others around the community and say, your ship is coming in, go get your cargo, what have you. Well, obviously, we've gone beyond that these days, so we're not using spy glasses. We're now using telephones and faxes, and of course now satellite communications, some other transponder systems we're going to talk about here in a minute. Next slide. These are the other Marine Exchange around the country. It's called the Maritime Information Service in North America. I'm the president of that group. And so we kind of collaboratively work on these issues. We're on the lead. Alaska, we started this long-range tracking system, and we brought these other Marine Exchanges around the country that are now participating involved with that. So I visit them on occasion, which I choose the winter to go and check the Marine Exchange in Florida, things like that. But and I never leave in the summer.
Smart.
Next slide. Here's our founding members. You know, we are originally supported, developed, and we still are maintained largely by the marine industry, who embrace the philosophy that they too believe in the same missions the Coast Guard and others do, and they see the merit of having safe, secure, efficient, environmentally responsible maritime operations. So certainly, Marine Highway System is well known, and Total Motion Shell Express, Salt Chuck, and British Petroleum. New Horizon, Horizon Lines now, back then with CSX and Crowley, and all the pilot associations, and Pacific Seafood Processor Association, what have you. Now we have over 100 members. But this is the original kind of core group that said, we're there, let's form the board of directors, let's go for it. Next slide. And one more slide, and just click it a couple times. This is all the different segments of the maritime community that we really represent, and we're interacting with all the time, from the small passenger vessels to the cruise ships to the tankers to the small, the Coast Guard vessels, trampers and tankers, what have you. And it's a very diverse maritime community, and no more diverse maritime just anywhere else, I think, in the world for that matter. Next slide. And when we look at the foundation, our first foundation, that's where we spent some time today, and we spent a lot more time as you, is you got to have qualified mariners. It goes right down to, if you don't have qualified mariners, everything else is, you can give them the best equipment, if they don't know how to operate it, we're going to fall on our face. So the biggest and most important thing is our maritime pride and education program, is get Alaskans involved in operating the vessels, applying our waters. And then we give them the information, is the next key thing. And when you give them the information, the tools, then you really end up getting a safe, secure, efficient, environmentally responsible maritime ops. Next slide. And so some of our programs is Maritime Pride and Education, Maritime Database, Charts and Publications, where we actually print charts here right downtown with all the updates. We get the data from NOAA, and 15 minutes later, they're printed out, and we can hand to the mayor and say, here's some fresh charts that are updated, and they should help you get there to where you want to go. Vessel tracking, which is really going to be the focus of our talk here in a minute. And then we aid in the compliance of safety and security and environmental regulations to help people do the right thing. In maritime pride and education, we're highlighting the key, how critical it is to our way of life that the maritime industry provides those staples and gets our natural resources to market so we can actually sustain the state And, of course, we're trying to get awareness of that and also provide educational programs. And we've been going to the middle schools now to get people groomed, interested, and to find a training opportunity, some scholarships, what have you, to go in this industry. Next slide, please. When you talk about maritime security, we think that probably the biggest, and I hate to call it targets, but maybe the things we should be concerned about protecting is really the maritime industry. Clearly, if you look at a cruise ship with several thousand people on that, that could be a 9/11 type caliber event, especially if you took a couple of them simultaneously, or tankers, and then other vessels, two cargo vessels, some of them are carrying explosives or other cargoes that are somewhat sensitive, or LNG or chemicals, what have you. And then the facilities themselves. And so when we look at that, first thing we need to know is, where are these vessels, essentially? Next slide. When we talk about maritime security, we see that the threat is being addressed through a shared commitment. And that's the U.S. Coast Guard, who spent millions on it. The marine industry, well, we spent millions on it because of security plans and training and the new equipment we've had to put on our vessels here the last couple of years to implement the Maritime Security Act. And then, of course, the state of Alaska. All of us should be working cooperatively in a shared commitment forum to protect the state of Alaska. Next slide. When President Bush talked about this, first said, we just need to push our borders out as far as we can. We can't wait till people come right up to our doorstep and see if they're okay. We want to know where those ships came from. And we want to know where they are right now to help manage our threat. And of course, the way people access Alaska is predominantly by vessel. Next slide. When the comment on the Coast Guard, Admiral Collins, talked about maritime domain awareness, know where things are out there, he talked about automatic identification system, which is transponder system, which is line of sight, VHF. And he talked about long-range tracking systems that would aid enormously, giving them information on vessels long, well before they reach our ports. We took those cues and said, we know what they want, how do we get there? And next slide. So we developed what we call the Automatic Secure Vessel Tracking System, which is operated today by the Maritime Information Service of North America, although we run it, we're the head operator of it, and we manage the system, and it inexpensively tracks vessels around the world. Next slide, and I'll show you that in a minute. It's operational today, I call it the Latte Day Solution. It literally costs $3 a day to track a vessel anywhere in the world every couple hours. That's how inexpensive it is. And in many cases, we're using equipment on board the vessel. We don't step on board the vessel. We just start tracking. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And it meets objectives. Sees vessels well before they reach our ports. Next slide. The only thing that really interests here is that Congress recognized, and we've been meeting with several times with Congressman Young and Senator Stevens and the Senator Murkowski on this issue, and they saw the merit, if you want to expedite something pretty quickly, to allow to use existing maritime organizations, building the system to give this information. Next slide.
Wait.
Yes, sir.
I didn't finish reading yet.
Sorry. Senator, that's why I go so fast. Can you go backwards?
For those of us who are challenged.
I haven't read it 10 times before. You know?
Thank you.
Sir.
And as we get into this, sir. Please feel free to ask questions, particularly when we get to the part where we're showing the live demonstration here.
Can this GMDSS, that's a Global Marine Distress Signaling System, which is on the ship, but it's on there if you get an emergency, you can hit a trigger and it'll send off a signal, it'll tell where you are. But we can also program those remotely, and when you'll see what happened to the Saldanha U, we went on and from Juneau, went on and forced that unit to start tracking and to give us the position of that vessel as it was adrift without power.
Then how come we didn't keep the Leconte off the rocks?
Oh. They asked where I was, we told them where it was, right?
When it stopped?
Oh, you're on the rock.
And so, you know, what the system does, it really locates vessels the Coast Guard wants to protect. If you're going to protect a cruise ship or a tanker, kind of nice to know where it is. It makes it easier to protect it if you know where it is. Or passenger vessels, or chemical carriers, or explosive-laden vessel, whatever. And also identify a suspect vessel. And I'll show you what we mean by that. The next slide. I'll go one step further. We also analyze, and like I said, I get people smarter than me, and that's how we pull this off. We analyze all different satellite systems, and the many different, it's not as simple as the sounds. They don't all have a good footprint of Alaska. Next slide. We actually went ahead and charted a fishing boat and went out cruising through Aleutians. We looked like a spy vessel. We rigged up all kinds of satellite systems to test them to see what would work. And next slide. And then what that does for us is that right now the Coast Guard and other agencies have some raw data they get from flying the aircraft or satellites, and they see a bunch of dots in the ocean. If you want to know the name of that dot, what you need to do is bring a pair of binoculars and get in an aircraft, climb in a plane, and fly out there, and hopefully you have good visibility, fly low, and read the name, and you get the name. Or, next slide, you could use our system that's been tracking it, and you can know where it's been every 2 hours for the last year, and you only have to worry about the ones that aren't in the system. You only look for the nonconformities, anomalies, the people who don't want to disclose this information, that aren't interested in sharing information with the Coast Guard. The problem with doing it through, the Coast Guard is talking about doing this through the International Maritime Organization. Some of the problems with that normally things take 7 to 10 years to happen through IMO. The second one is everyone who signed up to IMO, which maybe aren't the most, upright countries, because like 120 of them or whatever it is, they all have access to information. So it's sometimes easier for them to say, if the industry would just voluntarily do that for us, we'll give you express lane privileges becoming the United States. And those who don't want to know where, don't want to share this information, you go on inspection. You can just incentivize this, what comes down. And that's our position.
Let me just say, that's a key concept of this, because if you had to stop every vessel and go look at it, you'd have them lined up. So the idea is to keep commerce moving with a minimum of a disruption, but still provide security of knowing what the vessel is and what it's got on board.
Next slide. And then this would be identifying the target vessels. They're not playing ball. There's where you focus your attention. The other 99% you don't have to worry about. Next slide. We track Coast Guard vessel, NOAA ships, cruise ships, tankers, marine highway system, tugs, container ships, what have you. So we've really kicked the tires on this. Next slide. Here's examples from Juneau, Alaska. We never stepped on board this ship. I don't know what it looks like. But Bill Benning knew how to send an email to Australia that sends it up to a satellite, sends his program he makes, comes down the satellite into the ship and programs the ship's computer and says, from now on, send the Marine Exchange of Alaska position report every 2 hours or 30 minutes or whatever we tell them to do. And that's going to cost a latte a day. I have about 3 lattes a day, so this doesn't even register my money. I can afford that. Next slide. This is an example of what we're looking at this summer. At one point, the Coast Guard said, the district commander at the time, Admiral Underwood, said, I got a mission to protect cruise ships and tankers. I'm not sure, I don't know where they are. Can you help me? So we went ahead, he sent a letter to all these companies, said, I would like you to voluntarily participate in this system to help me do my job. And so we color-coded things. You can see the black ones up and down are the tankers. The white ones are the cruise ships. They kind of hover. The purple ferries, a little humor on my phone. You have to have a little humor. You look at dots all day long. Fill a little color into this
thing. I'm still looking for the latte.
I hope no one from the ferry system. I'm sorry. Green are container ships. And then this kind of these other grayish tugs and tows, and when you select, you bring your mouse over the a dot, that information pops up, tells you about the vessel. Yes.
Do you have an identifier for foreign flag vessels?
No, we could. I mean, we could.
Do you think
that
will be
colors.
Necessary?
Generally, we know the tankers are all U.S. flag. You know, container ships, most of them are U.S. flag. The other ones are trampers that we know differently, but we can change. We can change this color any way we want to. We can modify it. To date, and to be honest with you, most of the ships that we have are U.S. flag vessels participating. So there aren't too many foreign flag vessels participating, except for
the
cruise ships.
Do you want them to participate?
Absolutely. I mean, I would think that the goal would be everybody who's doing the right thing should participate. Saying, I have nothing to hide. I want to participate. I want you to see me as an ally. I want express lane privileges, too, by the way.
Thank you.
Well, and just to address that, we're also been working with the Coast Guard because now they require 96 hours advance notification. Well, they're way out in the middle of the ocean still. And the other thing is that they say, you have to tell us what the last 4 or 5 ports that you were in. Well, all they do is file that as a piece of paper. You don't know if that's true.
Right.
They could have pulled into, Algeria or anything else, or you just wouldn't know. But our system provides a record of tracking of every port that vessel went to. It stopped and hooked up to another ship, and or any suspicious activity, you can see it all in the system.
Can the ship turn off this signal?
Yes, but that's make my day type of thing. Anyone who's messed with the system, suddenly they're an anomaly, because the satellite doesn't match up with our information, that's your target of interest. Anyone who does anything to modify the norm is essentially put the spotlight on themselves. So I would hope they do that, because then we can help discriminate which vessel we should focus our attention on.
But then how do you find them if they shut off?
Well, initially, when I earlier data, I mean, the satellite imagery provides raw data of just a bunch of dots out there. Then you have to identify the dots and then determine then which ones you want to control. If you can't find any way to correlate this information to the raw data, that's a target of interest. That means they're not participating. So you really need a baseline, which is already provided, so they compare two overlays. I spent 30 years in the Coast Guard. Our standard thing was you get these images, and you fly for 8 hours, and look out the window, and figure what the name of those vessels were. And you couldn't check them all out. So you just kind of guessed. And I think we want to go here today type of thing. So this is, you know, using technology as a friend to get there, get a little closer, and economize and prioritize and what have you. Next slide. And if you double-click on something, you get more information on the vessel. Next slide. Let's get a feel for it. And this is just more images of the ships. Next slide. This is the Marine Highway System. When she came from the East Coast to the West Coast, we tracked it every 30 minutes, I think it was. In that case, we used the ship security alert system. Some new equipment's required on vessels. The same idea. It's kind of like a bank teller alarm. You push the button. GMDSS is a Global Marine Distress Safety System. Push the button. You say you're in sinking. Ship security alert system. You push the button, say, under attack. But we can program these things remotely to track vessels, what we're doing. Next slide. Or not me. The Celadon IU, when the Coast Guard called us and said, we have a vessel adrift. Can you please find it, track it, and give us a display? So Bill Benning did his magic. And then a little later, we actually were watching the vessel every 15 minutes. In fact, Admiral Olson's staff was here in Juneau. The Coast Guard cutter was on scene and said, we're okay, the vessel's anchored up. And the staff said, actually, we're 1,000 miles away, but it's not anchored, it's drifting anchor. As they could see from this, that it was not where it's supposed to be. It actually started dragging. Next slide. Because we zoomed in to this level. We had different zooming levels that you could see the vessel.
Before you go on, I mean, this is accurate to about 5 feet. So what was happening is 1,000 miles away, the command center here had better information on whether that anchor was holding than the Coast Guard ship on the scene.
And then similarly, a couple of weeks ago, when you heard about the cruise ship that was
Explorer,
Coast Guard called us again, built his magic. Half hour later, we're tracking the Explorer all the way to Hawaii. They said, we don't need any more. When the Leconte ran aground, we did likewise, source point. But we can't do that kind of information. Next slide. Now, there's another wrinkle coming up, nothing we're building and right now as we speak, is this AIS system, which is a different type of system, different piece of equipment, limited line of sight, but instead of every hour or two, because you essentially have to pay a dime every time you get a position report on these other ships, AIS is just a continual stream every 12 seconds of position reports, kind of like an aircraft transponder thing. But the problem with that is you have to build a huge infrastructure. Next slide. So the Coast Guard said, we're going to build these things in the next couple of years around the country, these little receiver sites. But the footprint is not as big as they even reflect in the stock. It's much smaller than that. We looked at Alaska, we said, next slide. So we said, we can do better than that. We can do it the kind of strategic locations in Unimak Pass and Cook Inlet and on Seward and Kodiak and Southeast Alaska and give you this stuff. And that's the grant that Paul talked about. I said, you can do that now. And we're looking maybe 2008, 2009. So we can do it now. And so we are actually building it as we speak. Next slide. And all that data is being pulled back into Juneau. And it gets sent to the Coast Guard and even goes to back to D.C. and also local Coast Guard and to the Catlin ports. And for that matter, it should be going to the state also. We haven't signed up to work those arrangements out yet, but that would be the goal. We have a network operating control center. Next slide.
Before you go on, and we have a contract with the Office of Naval Intelligence also to provide this data to them directly.
And there's two places we work out of. One above the hangar restaurant, because there's good food downstairs. and the other one is from here because the leak doesn't. I mean, the roof doesn't leak, so we have two different locations. So we put the electronics where the roof doesn't leak. We put the people above the restaurant type of thing. Next slide. And so this is our operations center we built. That's really only open, and the Coast Guard only funds this for 40 hours a week. We're only open during daytime hours. While in fact, these issues are probably a concern the other 75% of the time we're not around. Next slide. And then next slide.
That's right down by the Douglas Bridge.
Yes, sir. And we'll follow up. We can send an invite to any one of you. We'd love to give you a tour. We'd be honored to give you a tour, just to see a little more depth. If we go out to the internet, I think one slide looking at the internet real quickly, Leo and then Bill was going to just walk you through real quickly from our website how this thing actually works. It's password protected, so anyone who gets a username and password, that dictates what you can see. So if you're a tanker company, said, I want to see tankers, your username and password only allow you to see your tankers. So you think you're the only ones on the ocean. You're just not going to let them know who else is out there. The Coast Guard gets the master password. They can see anyone who has a role in maritime security or what have you will have a larger password. And so then, and Bill has one of those master passwords. He's the master tech.
I just wondered why we're now live, right?
We're live. We're on the internet right
now.
There's
actual real-time stuff we're seeing as we speak here.
And we are actually drawing signals because we're partnering with other marine exchanges around the country and even overseas in some cases. These are AIS images, and then we're having satellite images. So we have two types of systems. We have the AIS, which is only where we have a footprint we can look out. It's kind of like a line of sight VHF radio. You can do it that far. We're finding a little better than that because it's that, but maybe 30 or 40 miles is a good average of coverage. And then if you go up beyond that, you need the satellite. So if you want to know where a vessel came from, AIS won't do that. Long range tracking will tell you where it is. But this will show you our quick inlet sites are now generating data. So we can see the LNG tankers, we can see the oil tankers, we can see the container ships, we can see the tugboats going in that area. And if you click on a contact, is Horizon Tacoma, container ship operating Cook Inlet, which is one of the members of Marine Exchange, as well as Toad is a member of Marine Exchange. You can go back there. Okay. And what you can do is just blow in, zoom in or zoom out. You can change the chart displays, what have you. The nice thing about this is that the captain of the port, the best way for them to get information is our site. You know, our site is the best information they have on what's going on out there. It has not yet been developed that all the Coast Guard officers can see this. So it's fairly, easily accessible through the internet, but also protected. It's what they call 128-bit encryption, which is a way of protecting data, so only those who legitimately need to know have it. In the marine industry, you have company security officers that have responsibilities to ensure their fleet is secure, not under attack, going where they're supposed to be going, haven't turned around all of a sudden, haven't stopped, gone to the wrong port or what have you. They can see their vessels through this system. There's facility security officers. Again, the facility security officers can see which vessels are coming to the port and scheduling. But the benefits, as we talked earlier, alluded to earlier, again, is not just for security, it's for safety. In fact, the genesis of Automatic Secure Vessel Tracking System, we have the same acronym, ASVTS, but originally stood for Alaska Safety Net Vessel Tracking System. That's how we did it. Bill Benny and I are both in the Coast Guard. When the Arctic Rose went down, we looked at that in the context of safety. But soon, when 9/11 came around, we realized it was more than safety. It was actually security. And then when you look at the Celadang IU, it's environmental protection, environmental response. So it really serves several purposes. And lastly, it serves the purpose of efficiency for the marine highway system, what have you. If they want to track their vessels and ensure the coordination with cargo, what have you, you know where they are and you can arrange with everybody else as a role, the tugs, the pilots, the line handlers, the facility personnel, what have you, can all know when that vessel has shown up so they can be more efficient in their operations.
What about the last crab boat that went down? Were they in?
No, they were not.
Who programs into the vessel specifics
when
he had shown
me? We do that. I mean, we have a database of all the marine exchanges that have, in fact, we've worked with all the marine exchanges in the country in a very lengthy database. We're trying to shorten it, but last ports of calls, owner-operators, charterers, specification of the vessel, cargo, what have you, and we just compile that with all the marine exchanges. And we're melding that into this system, if you will. So when you push to click the button, it really links to another database, and it provides all that data. And this is, you know.
These are just past records of the Testamina. Another one that we did is when the Coast Guard had a ship that was going to be stationed in Cordova. We tracked it all the way through the Panama Canal in, and then the kids at that school could follow the ship all the way coming in there. So this is part of what we're trying to do with maritime education, too. You can do kind of a adopt-a-ship program We can email back and forth to these units, can receive email. We can also get direct weather reports by email to the vessel. And Bill, I wonder if you wouldn't mind show the weather buoy capability. We're going to show you real time now of any weather buoy in the state of Alaska, the weather as of 6 minutes ago. This is all available on our website, and this isn't password protected. You can go on and get this as well as.
And on the website, we actually broke information on ports and facilities and regulations, state and federal regulations, and obviously weather information, emergency contacts, emergency information, literally hundreds of pages of information on this website. Again, as part of the component, once you have qualified maritime industry, then you need to get the information so they can do their job right.
So there's the specs on the buoy, and then this is giving us wind direction, wind speed 25 knots, wind gust 31 knots, wave height 23 feet, dominant wave period 11 seconds, average period 8 seconds, atmospheric pressure, pressure tendency, it's rising, air temperature, water temperature, and ice accretion, a wind chill. And that's current as of 6 minutes ago for any weather buoy. So a vessel can now get real-time weather data directly to the ship through this system.
23 foot.
So,
let's go.
It's
higher than the ceiling.
Yeah.
So when you think back of marine exchange, we're exchanging information, volumes of information that really have a nexus to our mission statement of safe, secure, efficient, environmentally responsible maritime operations using newer technologies. And as Paul had mentioned earlier, I first came up with this idea when I was captain of the port for Los Angeles Long Beach, and a radar on top of this one hill was sufficient. We were thrilled. But that, you would, don't even bother giving me a radar in Alaska because it wouldn't do me any good. It's just too big a lift. There's too much to cover. So we looked at different technologies. How can we take advantage of satellite technology and the internet to get more information for our nation's largest maritime state? And so that's been our challenge, and that's why we've done it through technology. And we're working very closely with the Coast Guard on this and the marine industry. And now at this point, we really want to start bringing the state into the fold and the shared commitment role and have them part of this solution that we're building as far as something that helps provide for maritime security, safety, environmental protection of our ports. And to that end, we've been talking with the Park Service about monitoring the vessels in Glacier Bay so they can ensure that people are towing a line and they're comfortable that they are.
This is not live now, is it?
This is live right here, Port of Anchorage.
Well, I'm sorry, that's historical imagery.
Okay.
It's live on the internet, but the snapshot is historical snapshot. But our image of where the ship is posted on top of the. So it's a clear day in Anchorage. It's not today's weather.
I thought I saw Paul.
Someone did that tulip over there, and you'll notice it. But that's just another layer. It could be a navigational chart layer. It could be a satellite imagery layer. It could just be a very simple chart so you have less clutter, less distraction. It's very crisp and clean. You can see the vessel spatially relationship to other areas. So it's really the user's preference. And there's a whole suite of indexes and catalogs we can touch upon. In some cases, the fishery zones and restricted zones, protected areas. So they're environmental overlays, if you will, that you can also put on here.
So that one is just leaving the dock.
Would you pick out one of those ships and tell us who it is?
This one right here.
Yeah. Can you blow up a little bit bigger there?
It's the Tug Sea Prince, they know. This is live AIS from Nikiski. We've got an AIS radio site in Nikiski co-located with the oil spill response organization called CISPRI. And they allowed us to put a radio site on their tower.
And we also partnered with the Homer South SWAPA. Southwest Alaska Pilots Association, and we put a transponder on their building. So we're working with the marine industry as far as getting this capability up real fast. And it's really very inexpensively for what we're getting. This was something that was really years out for the Coast Guard, and we're doing it about 10 cents on the dollar, and we're doing it now. Just doing it, the Nike solution, just do it.
I don't know if you noticed, but it was also showing the ship speed. It's calculating the ship speed as it's going along. So there's a lot of operational data that's also transmitted along the
slow
signal.
Down.
What does it cost the vessel to start up on this program?
Well, it's a good question. The AIS was required by IMO, the Coast Guard required IMO, and equipment is somewhere in the neighborhood of $8,000. That's the AIS equipment. And what was from the marine industry perspective, what was unfortunate, we were sending a signal out all the time, but nobody was listening. Maybe Al-Qaeda was listening, but the Coast Guard wasn't. They had not built the capability, nor could we hear our own vessels. The shore support could not know where their vessels are. We were just broadcasting. So we literally, we kind of changed the name of AIS. We called it the Secure Passive AIS. We would not rebroadcast that, as a Coast Guard system would do, because it's not protected. And we also put it into a secure system. And then we get that to the owner-operator of the Coast Guard. So we're really developing the capability so the good guys can hear where the vessels are. That piece of equipment costs extra. The other equipment actually has been required for other reasons since 1999, for about 5 years now. So it's already up, so we're just taking available equipment and programming it and using it for a different reason. Instead of waiting for when you, and what the good thing about that is the safety equipment, we found that some of our tankers in Alaska were off in North Africa for some reason. A whole bunch of them were. And what had happened was that no one had ever used a safety switch. So no one realized the first time it was used when we decided to use it, and they found that was the input device wasn't into it. So it said 0000, which is off the coast of North Africa by the equator. That's the Latin long of zero. So they said, would you plug that in? Whoop, now they're in Alaska. And it jumps over Alaska. Miracle. So, so we saw some benefit, ancillary benefit, just by having that equipment. Now it's tested all the time. We know it's working properly, so if there is an emergency situation, it really would say where you are, not 0000. But we're really just programming existing equipment without any cost other than the fact that the latte a day, which I know some people don't want to give up a latte a day, but you go 4 to 3, you can still survive.
But just to answer your question again, AIS system is pretty expensive, but if you wanted to put one on a boat of yours and just use one of these satellite-based systems, what's the cheapest unit you could put on? About $1,000?
$500
now for the unit to go on your vessel that you could track yourself and have access to email to the vessel.
Actually, there's one that Bill allows me to install, and he refers to it as a duct tape solution, which means anyone can operate duct tape and can look at the sky and do this, because it literally is about this big. It's about $500. A piece of plastic is it.
A... You didn't bring one of those in, did you? You showed it to me.
Right.
Do you have one with you?
I didn't. I probably should have brought one. Just a little piece of plastic, and the battery, the antenna, everything's in there. And we literally just tape it on, and then we're tracking explosive shipment or attacking a cruise ship or anything else, and it just broadcasts duct tape.
I know that fishing game has had violations with fishermen. Do they contract with you to follow these guys, or do they do it themselves?
No, there's another system for fisheries we're trying to fold. And initially, our goal, to be honest, was the tracking system that was used by fisheries was not that information. It was one way. You couldn't communicate back to the vessel, say, someone's distressed, could you help them? Or you couldn't get back to them, say, you're in the wrong area, leave. It was only one-way system. And we thought that didn't make any sense, and it didn't go to the Coast Guard. So Bill and I, that's where we went on the fishing vessel. We said there's better, cheaper systems, the equipment's cheaper, operating costs cheaper, and you get 10 times more for the bucks. And NIFIS said, no, you're wrong, it won't work. He said, well, where won't it work? And they said, the caller said, well, we're gonna prove otherwise. So we went out there in Aleutians, met with the people back in DC, and we cruised Aleutians and tested different systems, said these will in fact work. And so now the regulations have changed. You have to use one of these other two-way systems. Which now provides a level of safety in addition to just the enforcement role. I mean, really, enforcers didn't want to write a penalty. They want to say, get out of that area. We want you to comply. That should be the goal, not to write a violation report. If you have two-way comms, you can tell them, comply, or I will write a violation. Or a two-way comm says, one of your sister vessels is sinking. Would you mind giving them a hand? Of course, they will. As our experience is, they always do.
Well, the other thing we found with that is the Coast Guard said, while you're out there, let's test the systems that you, what is the one for the EPIRB system,
right.
And will you test it out there compared to your system? So we set off these systems that we had, and we were never longer than, 6 minutes was the longest that we had, something like that? For 2 or 3 minutes. The longest we had for EPIRB to reach the Coast Guard to indicate an emergency out there was 102 minutes. 1 hour and 42 minutes before the Coast Guard was able to detect the EPIRB had gone off. So these systems are actually a lot more secure, and what the Coast Guard likes about it, you get a vessel in distress, they can go to it and see if it's still transmitting, if it's still there, if anybody's nearby that could verify, because what happens if they can't verify, they have to launch a search and rescue, and they told us They waste $1.9 million a year on false rescues, and they're actually spending more on false rescues than they are on real rescues.
Yes? Well, yeah, we do. We are, as you saw, one of us, we saw it travel around the world. We have data for a year back. So it gets a little more complicated with AIS. It's easy to archive data that's every 2 hours versus data that's every 12 seconds. So we're in the process of actually clipping the other data and say, even though we get every 12 seconds, we don't want to buy that many servers. So we want to do it like every 30 minutes or so. We're clipping the data, take one piece of that data and send it into the file drawer, if you will, for getting it later on. But predominantly it's for the security purposes. As Paul mentioned, they asked what the last five ports of call. They don't know what they were, so that's why they asked them. We should know what the last five ports of call. There shouldn't be any question as to where they were. And then that would give you an indication as to whether you want to inspect that vessel or not. And the other thing is, such as 9/11, when we had the emergency 9/11, it wasn't one aircraft, it was several. We really wanted to take an inventory of all the aircraft and bring them down to the ground. Similarly, if you had an incident that happened here, you don't have an inventory of where all the cruise ships or whatever vessel has been stricken, and you want to bring them to safe haven. You want to be able to pop a Coast Guard cutter to meet with them and surround them and protect them, but you really need to know where they are to do that. And they could do that instantaneously. And I know earlier we had some security concerns here a year or so ago. The Coast Guard was calling the ships to find out where they were, and they actually turn them on to this and say, we'll give you the information. We gave them that information for a year for no cost. Say, look, we think it's a good thing for you to have and take a look at it. And they said, gee, we like it more. I want you to build this, enhance this capability, expand it. And we still are in a growth mode. And like I said, we're only open 9 to 5 or 8 to 5. Fortunately, the Cell, Dang, IU, and Explorer came on those hours. But after hours, we're not there. So we're trying to build this into a 24-hour operations center that could represent the interest of the Marine Highway System, the other shipping entities, the state, the Coast Guard, and to the marine industry as far as changing maritime security levels, brokering information, what have you.
And let me add to that. We are asking the state for money to this. We're asking for Homeland Security money, and the state gets an allocation of it every year. We can make this a 24/7 operation for about $250,000 or $300,000. And the Marine Highway System wants this capability. They don't have a 24-hour system. If something happens, they don't have it. They're having to call to try to find somebody on the phone. The other thing is the high-speed ferry has different requirements. You have to track them and have that to meet the law. Could you tell us the requirements there, Ed?
Well, it's every 15 minutes, but you're supposed to have a flight following type of thing, which they really don't have, right? And so this would provide that capability.
So where is the funding request coming? Is it coming through General Campbell's budget?
We're actually making it through the administration. You have to be a municipality or a sector of state government. So it's actually DOT that's supporting this, and okay, it's through DMVA is the one that has the Homeland Security money, and I think there's some money left over from last year, and then there'll be another allocation for next year. So you may see it in the budget documents coming across.
Okay.
But there are federal monies that give it to the state for Homeland Security. We thought a chunk of that would be appropriate to kind of share in this system, if you will, that provides that and has some other ancillary benefits too.
What's the smallest length vessel you can crack?
Well, kayaks.
Anything that'll hold the plane.
I brought a boat up from Seattle last June, and it's 31 feet, and I tracked it all the way from Lane, Washington, all the way to Hawk Bay.
Every half hour.
Every half hour.
Literally kayaks.
Literally kayaks.
Yeah.
He has one in his kayak. He just doesn't know it yet.
Woo! See, you can,
good staff.
You can run, but you can't hide.
This could be used for staff to track legislators.
For the other way.
You're
right?
Out here.
We have salt if you said that.
About weather, you impacted by weather at all?
Bill, maybe AIS a little bit, but not really, not substantial, not the satellite.
Yeah, AIS operates in the VHF range, about the same marine band, and will slightly be affected by weather, but the satellite stuff is not high enough frequency where really we don't have that much of an impact with weather. Our biggest hurdle in Alaska is geography, and it's dealing with mountains in the way of the satellite or VHF. We're not flat like Ford.
The satellites you use are the GMDSS satellite system?
We use a number of different
satellites. About 18
satellites.
Different.
We use ORBCOM, Iridium, GlobalStar, and InMarsat, and MSAT. And we've got a number of different types of satellite systems that we incorporate into the system.
And some are preferable for Alaska than others. So if someone comes to us, we say, you know, you're close to shore, you'll have terrain masking. That mountain will prevent you from seeing a satellite. But generally speaking, we've had good luck with a global orbiting or the polar orbiting or just orbiting satellites are very good. But even the NMARSAT has been, most vessels don't stay that close to shore anyway. We got awfully close up in the Aleutians where the altitude of the height of over the horizon is quite low. And yet we were still seeing much better than we anticipated. Some that's due to knife edge refraction, other factors, but we're finding that the coverage is excellent, but we're also trying to be open architecture. We're not trying to have people buy new equipment. So what do you have on board right now? See if we can tap into that. And that's why we use GMDSS. That was actually, I was running around these little transponders and Bill hired him on board. He said, why are you doing that? We'll just use what's on board already. And that's how he figured out how to use existing onboard equipment without any hardware costs, without stepping on board the vessel. And they could be in India, and which has been occasion. We've had them in India. We start tracking them in India from Juneau, Alaska, just through technology. That's pretty slick stuff.
I didn't.
We got a question here.
Great. I didn't pick up on whether you can do weather with this. Can that be one of the overlays?
Yeah. Well, here's what it is that if you want weather to the vessel, and it's hard to get broadband to the vessel because it takes these huge units that are on gyroscopes to stay lined up and everything like that. But with the satellite, you can send emails. So we've developed a form that you type in the buoy number, and it goes and queries it, and it comes back, and it sends you that data, that wave data and everything like that.
Yeah.
And it comes to you as an email.
I think the other one you're leading to is you could put sensors on these ships and put that in the transponder and ship out data on the weather periodically.
Right.
And that's been done. It can be done and can be expanded. So they have become little weather stations all over the place, flying the oceans.
And one of the things I'm doing right now is books on tape, and it's the perfect storm. And I'm thinking, hey, this could change the outcomes for all kinds of horrible things that happen in the high seas where our guys are out doing what they do for a living, right?
Well, you could essentially deputize a lot of boats. A lot of data, weather service are looking at it. These are these ocean station patrols, Bravo and Charlie patrols.
But that'll just tell you where you're at in the middle of the storm, no?
Well, that's true.
It might make a difference, though.
Well,
I used to sail on a weather cutter, a Coast Guard cutter, is a weather boat. We sat in the middle
Representative
of the storm.
Changes, the weather changes.
Thanks. Do you have a documented procedure that you follow anytime something comes up that might be related to terrorist activity and how you communicate with Homeland Security?
Well, we're constant contact with the Coast Guard. Yeah. Everything we see, we share with the Coast Guard. So their operations center is that much more. And so the data is, as long as everything's running right, it just goes right into the data system.
The woman that was
and so typically what it comes down to is
the woman.
We're really not,
she wrote
if someone who is under attack, they don't call the Marine Exchange. Although there's another system called the Ship's Security Alert System where they actually do go to Marine Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll go to the Coast Guard, it's the official reporting force. The Ship Security Alert System, what happens is if they push the button, it goes to Marine Exchange. And then we turn around and call the owner-operator of the ship and say, we got alert system. And today, we've had hundreds of them. There hasn't been anyone legit. They're all false alerts. But then they contact the ship with the code words, and they determine whether or not they're attacking. And they say, it's just... Joe, spilled coffee on the switch, or someone reached on the table wondering what that thing was and pulled it, and then this went off. And it's a silent alarm, so someone wouldn't know
that
they pulled it, but they check the switch and see it's dropped off or what have you. And sometimes the cell phone next to the thing has triggered off. We found a couple little funny things have happened with the alarm. So there's really a vetting process, but before you call the Coast Guard, the owner-operator is supposed to validate if that's legit or not. Because the Coast Guard learned from the EPIRB problem that...
Still a problem,
and it's been operating for 25 years.
And we go looking for EPIRB signals because we're close to it.
99% of the time, they're not
there. Yeah, so
and now we're putting even more stuff out there. So, and we're still really evolving into this is all new stuff. And we, you know, really, this AIS thing, we just we got the contract in October, and we've got 6 sites up right now that we put in place in operation. That's how new it is as far as that equipment. And the long-range tracking, the first time was this last summer, did with the Coast Guard with the long-range tracking, tracking tankers and cruise ships. So we're really at the brink of this, and no one else around the country is there yet. We're actually the lead, and of course, we were forced to take the lead because right. the conventional tools just wouldn't work for us.
Okay. Oh, this is the new Emerald here. It says carrying dangerous goods, harmful substances, or marine pollutants.
And it's
and then it gives Portland. The IMO hazard or pollutant category.
Do people in the city of Portland know it's there?
No.
Yeah. Call them up.
That's really our end of the question, but that's really what our presentation
was. Well, let me ask you, what can we do and how special many military and veterans affairs legislature as a whole to assist your mission and you to assist Alaska. What would be your suggestions or requests?
Well, you could encourage the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to accept our proposal to advance the system to a 24/7. And we're just in the process of talking with them now. They haven't said no, they've been very open to it, but I think if they knew that you supported it, I think it could help us.
Have they seen this presentation?
Some of them
yes,
have.
Yes, they have. We've given in requests beforehand. We put in several requests to the Department of Military Veterans Affairs over the last year and a half. We have never received anything, but we've put in several requests, and we've shown them what we can do and the capabilities.
So again, the movers and shakers in that department have seen all a part of this.
I don't know that General Campbell has.
General Campbell hasn't. Well, he's been in our office, and we showed him the tracking.
We showed him tracking.
And Tom Burgess, the head of the security, has seen what we're doing. I gave him a presentation very similar to this over a year ago.
But it wasn't as advanced as it is right now.
AIS
this has come way, way up from what it was.
I suggest the next time they get down here, you try to do that. Other questions from the committee?
Military is not tied into this, so you can't track them.
We cannot track military. We could if they wanted to. We tracked some Coast Guard vessels in the past. And we're working with the Austin Naval Intelligence. We get data to them every single day because they found that we have better information than they have in some areas. So they've asked us. For the data, but we're not tracking military vessels.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Anybody in the audience like to ask a question? Back here, please.
I want to make a statement. John Paradigm with Total Motion Trail Express. One, I want to point out that the Ranger in Alaska is one of the youngest exchanges, and now they're leading in this. And as a founder in the organization, we're very proud of what these guys have done, and also. Our ships are being tracked. It had zero impact on the operation. We got the captains to fill out a form so that we knew what the station numbers were, and we went through it. There's zero impact on the operation of the ship. This is all done seamlessly, I'm sure. It's been a very good system, and we track it. We haven't had any trouble. We haven't noticed if there's been any places where you can't track or any difficulties. But the first is that the Marine Exchange of Alaska is as the new guys on the block. New York has had one since the 1800s, San Francisco, and they're the ones leading this nationwide.
On behalf of the committee, I would like to thank you very much for this very, very enlightening presentation. But we do have a question, Representative Grinberg.
I have a question not about this this tracking system, but how much of a need is there for additional training facilities for people to run various types of ships and vessels, everything from fishing vessels to tankers. Would there be a need for another Merchant Marine Academy up in this part of the country?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure about Merchant Marine. Would anyone from our group like to address this?
I didn't mean to limit it to Merchant Marine. Something for mariners.
Well, and I'd like to tag, I know there is some interest, various members of this committee, to check into the feasibility of a maritime academy at Kodiak, okay. or some other obvious location. There's interest in this.
This is what this consortium is all about, and that's what we're looking at is to the future, what we can do with training in Alaska. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. And the problem I see with an academy up here is a population base that we have to fill that, as opposed to what we can send outside. What we're truly concentrating on is the unlicensed part.
The what?
The unlicensed part. Not the officer section, but the unlicensed part.
I see.
And that's what we're looking at.
But if I could add, I mean, what we're here doing right now is an inventory of what are the jobs available. It's a pretty impressive list when you look at how many different vessels operate our waters and how many jobs there are, and ancillary jobs, such as, I wouldn't have this job if I didn't have a maritime background, so this is still a maritime-related job. And so we looked at all those jobs, and then we're looking at the training needs to get those jobs and to maintain them and to upgrade those jobs, and then where the training is available, and if we can, you know, and if we have gaps, then we're going to try to fill those gaps in the most effective and efficient way. And if we get the training in Alaska, it's our goal. We want to expand the capability, so you know, we have some people here to fly to New Orleans to get some training for 2 weeks. I don't ever hear that again. I want to have them get an AVTEC or somewhere else in the state. So we, you know, over time, our goal would be you wouldn't have to go all the way across the country for short courses, but for Maritime Academy, I don't think we'd put a Coast Guard Academy up here or a Merchant Marine Academy or a CMA Academy or some other programs. We're really looking at a cost-effective way to ensure that to facilitate, get more Alaskans in maritime jobs. They're good-paying jobs. They're critical to our well-being, and allows and they last because they tend to be a little more unorthodox, if you will, lifestyle. Because you know, that's a bad word, but different lifestyle. I think we're a little more accustomed to things that from the hardships that may come around of going to sea, where others may say, "I just want a 9-to-5 job. It's okay." But they're so we really think that there's a greater potential to get more Alaskans, and that's our real goal. Is to find the jobs, find the training needs, and make sure we get that training fulfilled. And when we can do it in Alaska, great. If not, we want to get as close to Alaska as possible when it makes sense. And all of the long, with a real big commitment, it would not be cost effective to do it, you know, to start some of these programs in Alaska.
And so this has never happened before. I wonder, would everyone who's here just stand up and tell them who you are? I mean, we got people from all across the country here to.
Tracy Mayhew with the Seafarers International Union.
Dick Maroney, but also with the Seafarers.
And tell us where you're from, too.
Oh, I'm originally from New York, but I'm out of San Francisco.
Okay. Good place to be out of.
I'm lying.
And I'm up in the Anchorage area.
Somebody had group.
Charles Zale with IBU, here in New York.
Great. Amy Wilson with the Last Marine Highways and the Ketchikan.
I'm with C-Link, the Fleet Coordinator on the Ketchikan.
Terry
Mast
in the Boatman Union,
out of
our national office in Seattle.
Richard Preston with the Marine Exchange and the Alaska Highway System. I'm also retired Coast Guard.
Diane Boyd, the Marine
Exchange.
Leo DeMail
with
the Marine Exchange in Juneau.
And used to be with our building
here. Yeah.
Used to be
the. He's okay yeah. Otherwise.
Yeah. Barry Erickson with Pacific Coast Maritime Consortium. A boat in Anchorage and I'm stuck in Seattle.
Wally Stewart with the AWIP board.
I'm Harold Holt with the Marine Exchange and the appointed maritime director for maritime pride and education. Born and raised in Alaska.
Good.
I've already introduced myself, John Kerr with Tote and Anchorage.
That's for that group.
Anybody else?
Roger.
Yeah.
Well, Roger Mercer with Last Communication Technical Center. So.
Great.
I'm Scott McCauley with Master Mates and Pilots and Alaska Marine Highway, and I grew up in Jim.
Greg Trunell with the Pacific Maritime Institute in Seattle, Washington.
Nice.
I'm part of that group of Compass Courses at Woods, Washington. Courses, Alaska, and Juneau.
I know that gentleman back there, I believe.
There's something.
Compass Courses also.
I believe I.
Yeah, we're also looking at a secondary school program where we can have maritime training within the secondary schools for people to learn about marine careers and things like that. And a lot of our communities have wanted that too.
Smart idea.
I'd like to thank you very much on behalf of the committee. I'd like to thank you for your presentation. Our next committee meeting will be, I think it's February 17th, am I correct, at 1 o'clock in this same room. We'll be hearing a couple of bills from our own Representative Dawson, and we're looking forward to that. And with that, thank you. Meeting is adjourned at Looks like 10 minutes after 2:00.